All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Today's episode is primarily an interview with Ryan Harvey. And if you're a regular listener, you will know Ryan because he's often sent in audio bits and pieces for us, including gig reviews and song breakdowns for the A to Z. And today we will be discussing a few news bits with Ryan, and also we're going to be doing the next in our Oasis A to Z feature. And today it is Angel Child, which is very cool. And it's it's good to dig into that with Ryan. He gets the guitar out a little bit as well, which is good fun. And we will also be hearing a recording from another friend of the show, Richard Bowes, who went to the recent live show that Tim Abbott and Ian Robertson did at Western Supermare. So I couldn't make it in the end, but Richard went for the podcast. And and it sounds like it was a really good show. So you'll be hearing all about that shortly. And some good news. You might remember a few months ago now, I recorded with Zeb Jameson, the keyboard player who played with Oasis in around the year 2000. I've mentioned on here before, it was kind of got a bit delayed. I couldn't put it out, but it is now ready to go. So I can put that out, and that should be the next episode coming for you. So make sure you're looking out for that one. So in the world of Oasis news, Liam has been playing more gigs, having come back from holiday. And a couple of nights ago, he played in Budapest in Hungary. And Soul Love came back in. There's the BDI song Soul Love that he played back earlier on in the tour. He pulled it out a couple of times, and that's back in. So it remains to be seen whether it will be played at the big UK shows coming up. So let's have a little bit of that. All I know is you can be everything you want to be. Life is short, so don't be shy. 'Tis a joy, it's all you find. Sound up, sound up. Come into my world. It's all for you. Everything I do. It's all for you. The biggest thing in non news over the last week or so is probably that the Netflix Once in a Lifetime Sessions documentary has dropped. If you've got Netflix, check that out. It did appear on YouTube briefly, but then it's been taken down. So if you've got Netflix, that's worth watching. I won't go into that anymore here because we talk about it in the interview with Ryan Harvey. So we'll talk about that a bit more in there. And just if you've been following on Twitter recently, you will have seen a lot of chat about what is Britpop? Do certain bands qualify as Britpop? Which has been, it's been quite emotional discussions and things. I did a recent blog on the Patreon page just talking about how I define a band as being Britpop or having a period of time where they were part of Britpop. So, and we've dug into like whether certain bands were or weren't Britpop. For instance, our friend of the show, Mild-Mannered Max, argues that Shampoo were Britpop and Lightning Seeds weren't, which I think is a disgrace, and I think he should leave Twitter and delete his account immediately. Your fit to drop. Open up the window and jump into the blue. Things could be marvelous. Things could be fabulous. Soon. And following that sort of back and forth, there has been discussion about some sort of other Britpop based show. So obviously we've got the Britpop Revival show, but something as a bit of a one-off or a podcast or something. So thinking about that, make sure you're following me on Twitter and we'll see what happens with that. And just to follow up on the little tease from last episode, the interview I did with Mike Bruce, which was really good, and I really want to get out to you guys, will be coming to you shortly, but it won't be in the Oasis podcast world. It will be through this other Sonic Visions world, which is going to be a new show based on music videos, music video directors, that sort of thing. Whether or not that becomes a longer thing or if we just do a couple of one-off episodes, we don't know. But it's just really a way of getting that interview out to you guys, because it's really good and it would be heartbreaking to think that we could never get it out to you. It's also been 22 years, pretty much to the day, that Oasis played Nebworth on August the 10th and the 11th. So there's been quite a lot of footage, audio and reports from the Oasis at Nebworth shows. On the Stop Crying Your Heart Out website, there's a Louise who, you know, we mentioned later in the interview, who does an absolutely fantastic job, has collated a lot of that stuff. So if you want to dig back into that nostalgia and just have a look at all that old stuff from Nebworth, yeah, go for it. I've talked about it on here a few times in various interviews that we've done. I've mentioned it, that I was there on the Saturday and it was a great day, obviously. So I'm not going to dig into it anymore, but maybe if I'm still doing this in 3 years for the 25th anniversary, we might go into that a little bit deeper.
Somebody suggested that the next thing we should do should be these things at Nebworth. They didn't really have much significance to me. But, you know, somebody's only got a whisper in my ear. Oh, these are the biggest gigs of all time. And I guess, well, that's me, yeah. Thank you. You've just sold it to me. Thank you very much.
The giant stage lies dark and silent. Tomorrow, that'll be the focus for 250,000 people.
Do you know, over 4% of the population applied for tickets for Oasis. 4% of the population.
In just over 3 years, Oasis will have gone from being a new signing to one of rock's true giants.
You know, everyone was taking a big leap of faith that we were going to sell these shows out, and the first one, I think, went on sale. It, like, sold out in, like, minutes.
As if by magic, the sun's got his hat on.
Hey!
The idea was put to us, we should put another two nights on sale immediately. And I think for the first time ever, we kind of backed away. Don't know, maybe we got the sense it had become too big. And you find out afterwards that we could have done seven nights.
I can't believe that we only done two nights. Who's fucking great idea was that? We should still be there playing right now.
It was Andy Bell's birthday a few days ago, so happy birthday to Andy Bell, who's just turned 48. He's another person that has almost come on the podcast a couple of times. He's happy too. It's just a case of making it happen. But then he was off on tour again, he was on holiday again, so yeah, so hopefully September, October, we'll get Andy Bell. Watch this space. Also on Saturday, just gone, on Sky Arts in the UK, they had an Oasis night, and they showed the There We Were, Now Here We Are, a Making of Oasis documentary, and they showed Live by the Sea as well. So yeah, if you would check that out, it was fantastic. Okay, so let's jump back into that night I mentioned in Weston-super-Mare a couple of weeks ago, with friend of the show, Richard Bowes. Richard, over to you.
Do not adjust your listening device. You are still listening to the Oasis podcast. We have just been at the Ian Robertson and Tim Abbott talk in Weston, giving a little bit of insight into their days with Oasis. I'm here with fellow patron Amy. What did we think, Amy?
Well, it was very good. Kind of hard to really hear everything. Some of the sound seemed to be a little off.
Yeah.
Let's see. What did I learn from this? I learned that, so Patsy gave her her number was for Noel and not for Liam.
Yeah, that was interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting as well. Yeah, I'm glad they kind of talked about the possibility of a reunion.
Yeah,
I'm glad they talked about all of that, and they don't. And you know, the split was a long time coming, and I think it was like even longer than what I really realized that it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it's like there's no doubt now that there was any PR, like they genuinely seemed to really have massive problems, and as I say, it seems like it was a bit of a miracle it went on for longer than they did. And you know, we spoke earlier about, you know, in there having to get like separate, you know, coaches and cars and stuff, but it seemed like they didn't and perhaps don't like each other. I mean, Ian Ray's told a good story that I think, which it stems from when in Glasgow in the Barrowlands, Liam had to, because his voice was shot to bits, so Noel had to kind of step up to the plate, and that was the beginning of, I suppose, the beginning of the end, really, because you know, Noel could realised he could do it for himself. He got excited about singing his own songs, and then more and more Liam started getting usurped, and yeah, and I think that's kind of set the foundation for where they are now. I just don't think Noel doesn't think he needs Liam.
Yeah, and so they talked about Peggy and about, okay, so when she would go on tour with him, how like they would seem to behave better.
Make sure I'm still going.
I don't know. I think that was interesting in the respects of, well, kind of what she had to deal with them growing up. I don't know. I feel like they're just, you know, they're even more a product of their environment.
Yeah, massively.
And it sounds like it was a bad environment, and I don't know. It seems that maybe Noel's trying to not have that happen again with his children, which is good. I mean, he's a very participating father.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. He's kind of, he seems to be very hands-on with his kids. He talks about his kids in press, but doesn't get them involved at all. Like, every now and again you see a photograph on the Instagram and stuff, but he seems to be trying to encourage a quite healthy environment for them to grow up in, and as you say, to avoid his mistakes, as it were.
Yeah.
What do we think of the venue? I mean, I'll be honest, Ian Robinson's a big guy, and I had to move a couple of times because there were people just talking. Obviously, Oasis and Blur are playing here later on, so that's kind of the main draw. But there were people just talking away, and I couldn't, because I didn't have VIP, unlike my fellow patron here. So I was, you know, just couldn't hear over people. They were just chatting away to themselves, so I thought it was a bit rude. So I was kind of hoping Ian would use a bit of his considerable size to have a go at them, but he didn't. But it was a good, I mean, I think it was I think there's more to come. I think they could do a lot more. It sounds like they've got more stories to tell.
Right. Yeah, so I was in the VIP section. I was the only person in the front row, and that's fine. But I don't know, it's kind of disappointing because they had the pictures set, like a slideshow type thing going, and you couldn't really see because so much of it was blocked with the kit
equipment and everything for the band.
Yeah, for the band and everything. And so there was some pictures that I'd never seen, and picture of what's her name from San Francisco. I'd never seen Melissa Lynn, I think is her name.
Yes, I think it's right. Yeah.
Yeah, never seen a picture of her, and now I do now have a picture with a microphone stand right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. But yeah, I thought that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I think we've can give you an Oasis podcast exclusive. Tim Abbott is releasing a film called The Last Rock and Roll Circus. I don't know if that's, you know, don't know how public that'll be. I don't know if we're maybe...
And
some supersonic gin, indeed. We got a little tidbit of some footage at the end. Seems like there's going to be a lot of backstage Oasis stuff that wasn't included in Supersonic. A lot of stuff about Robbie Williams as well, because Tim used to manage him. But also some backstage footage of when Liam and Robbie Williams were hanging out. When Oasis and Robbie Williams were hanging out. I don't know if you saw at the end, there was an interview that Robbie and Noel did, which I think I've never seen. So potentially some more exciting stuff. I don't know if it'll be, you know, quite as in-depth as Supersonic, but definitely more to come, which is quite exciting.
Yay!
Now, as I say, I didn't have VIP, so Amy's going to go and hobnob with the stars. Or hobnob with Ian and Tim anyway, maybe go and ask some questions. I guess maybe some more answers to come. You can put some stuff on Twitter and share your knowledge. This is Oasis Podcast, Western Supermare.
Evening, JC. As promised, just got back from the evening with Ian Robinson and Tim Abbott. So just to give a bit of a summary of what happened. So, obviously you've heard the instant reaction to me and Amy. Got in. It's an interesting venue, is the pavilion. It's it's obviously very much a pavilion. So we got in there and there was the a VIP section, which was tapered off. So there's a bunch of seats and then the rest of the room, the rest of the punters were just kind of encouraged to stand around it. Initially, Ian took to the stage to do a bit of an introduction. And then he brought Tim out with him. As we kind of alluded to, the setup on the stage was for the two bands that were playing, Blurred and Oasis. We spoke with Tim afterwards, and he kind of mentioned that it wasn't quite how they wanted it. I mean, the slideshow, they didn't put on all the pictures they wanted, and so it was kind of set against the backdrop, so you had to like look through the band's equipment to kind of gauge that. A lot of the stuff that Ian kind of mentioned, talked through, was mainly around stuff that he actually covered in your interview. And indeed, if you read his book, a lot of it kind of cuts in there. He kind of goes and went into a bit of background about his history and how he met with the band the first night in New York. And then, as I say, Tim was brought on. And it was more kind of centered around a few stories from their time with the band, but it was more about how they found working with them. Tim kind of dips in and out. Dipped in and out of music, and he was amazed that he could see that they were very much going to be a proper band and going to make headlines. But he's more than once he commented that he was amazed to find himself in a pavilion in Western Supermare talking about them. One thing that Ian did keep on going back to during the talk was that it, as I kind of mentioned in the instant reaction, it there was that night at the Barrowlands in Glasgow in late 94. Liam had been indulging in their favourite pastime of Jack Daniels and other stimulants during the course of the day. And unfortunately, his voice was kind of shot to bits. They could tell as he started doing the gig that he wasn't going to make it finish the end of the show. They were working on the basis that Ian, they kind of went off stage and started to think about cancelling the next few shows. And actually, Ian went back to Liam... with Liam to the hotel, but Noel carried on. Noel and the rest of the band carried on. He sang the remaining songs, sort of six or seven songs left in the set. And Ian thinks that's a key moment. He thinks that from there on, Noel was actually enjoyed doing the singing. He was excited by the singing and singing his own songs as well, so putting his own delivery on them. And whenever opportunities for that. For Noel to take center stage happened, he was happy to take them. And Tim mentioned that he did feel quite bad for Liam, that he was starting to get usurped, and that he did indeed start to get usurped. As I say, the crowd wasn't there for the talk. I think it was quite obvious to see they were there for the band, or the bands. So it was quite hard to hear. I mean, they mentioned at the start they were going to pass a mic around for other people to ask questions, but no one seemed to be particularly forthcoming. I think there were a few people in the VIP section, about 11, 12, that were avidly listening, and a handful of us outside, but the rest of the time people were just talking amongst themselves, which, as I say, was pretty rude, to be honest. It was a bit of a shame for them, because, an interactive audience would have made the thing so much better. However, part of the VIP package was to go upstairs to the dressing room, as it were, and have a chat with them. Amy, bless her, had paid for the VIP ticket, and I just thought, well, I might just chance my arm and try and get up there, which I did. There was no kind of security or anything. Amy had the gold wristband, which got her through, but no one checked mine, or indeed there was no security, so I just walked in. Saw some of the couple of the platinum discs that have been presented to Tim Abbott, which again I'm sure there'll be pictures to follow in due course. There were the free laminates were given to the people that paid for the VIP of notes and diary entries that Ian or Robbo had made during the late 94. So there's a few little interesting little tidbits there, which again I'll take photographs to send over to you, because I think I wouldn't be able to do them justice. We then actually managed to corner Tim and have a bit of a chat with him. Again, apologies, it wasn't recorded, but it was quite the acoustics weren't right for the room, and it seemed, given that they had such a VIP kind of facility platform there, it seemed a bit cheeky just to go in. They were promoting their talk. It seemed a bit cheeky to go in and ask them for more questions. But had a bit of a chat with him. He's quite a character. As I say, he dipped in and out of music and kind of gave a few tips for bands that, well, one band he's currently managing called The Blinders. They've got an album coming out later this year. Tim reckons it's the best album he's heard since Definitely Maybe. He also went into a little bit of detail about how he started working for Creation, and that simply came through there was a night in Birmingham when he used to be a face at the sort of kind of acid house scene, and he somehow managed to get involved in having Bobby Gillespie and Alan McGee back to his place, and again indulging in nighttime favourites, and Bobby Gillespie had a bit of a chat with Tim and asked him kind of a little bit about what he did and what his job was, and he said he was a marketing consultant. As I'm sure everyone knows, Bobby Gillespie, and Alan McGee are pretty close, and Bobby just said to Alan, you want to get him working with you, and it kind of went from there. Interesting little tidbit as well, as I mentioned, Tim's got a film in the which he describes as a work in progress. He's actually been working on that for quite a few years, and it turns out he wanted to get it out before Supersonic, so we're going back a couple of years now, but it appears that he was kind of railroaded by Ignition, Noel's management company, to hand over a lot of footage that he didn't perhaps want to hand over, which could be used in the film. Hopefully this won't ruin any future relationships, but Tim did use the word to describe Ignition's management style as Machiavellian, so I think it was very much against his will that the stuff was used, but there you go. I think a lot of stuff also, he said as well, a lot of stuff was cut out. Apparently Peggy Gallagher recorded a lot of material which was Ignition decided they didn't want to include. You know, I'm sure Noel had his reasons for that, but apparently some of the stuff that Peggy offered was actually the best stuff in the film, so a bit of a shame we'll never get to see that. But his film, as I say, The Last Rock and Roll Circus, as and when it does come out, that looks like there'll be a lot of stuff to go in there, and judging by what he was saying, the stuff that went in Supersonic, he's got loads more in the vaults from that, and presuming he gets all the clearance and so on and so forth, it looks like it could be a good project. As I mentioned, there was a little tiny tidbit of I think it was after Glastonbury with Noel and Robbie chatting. Tim actually said he met Robbie Williams on the side of the stage at that Glastonbury 1994, and then started doing the marketing for him. So it's nice to know that, you know, sometimes business practices aren't what you think, and you know, it is kind of a serendipity. Tim's also launching his range of gin called Supersonic. He sat us through on his laptop some of the photographs that weren't up on the slideshow. There are a few others there. I didn't make the link, but there were loads of photographs of the Roll With It photo shoot, which is of course was in Western Supermare, which is where we were. So that combined with Ian coming from there explains a lot why it was the sort of inaugural run took place there. They are planning to do a few more, so I won't go into too many details, but on Tim's behalf, I'll give it a bit of a plug. They're doing one in Sheffield in September, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And yeah, as I say, it was a bit of a shame. There was only a tiny bit of footage at the end. It was primarily just the talk between Ian and Tim, so a bit of a shame because we were sold on the fact there was going to be extra footage shown, and there wasn't really any to speak of. So yeah, but it had its teething problems, but I think there's scope there for there to be some really good material to come out of it, and hopefully, you know, after the date in Sheffield, they'll tour some more, and it'll become, you know, they'll do a circuit, as it were, so everyone get a chance to see them. I'm sure there'll be other things I've forgotten, but hopefully, as I say, we can, you know, Tim will be on the podcast quite soon, so you can pin him down for some more detailed stories. As I say, I think he was a little bit pissed is the word, really. It was hard to kind of pin him down to take any stories about Oasis. He was going into details about jazz music he liked and jazz drummers and other sort of marketing projects he's worked on and that sort of thing, which I don't think would necessarily be of huge relevance. But nice guy, really nice guy. Ian was a really good sort of genial host. And yeah, as I say, a good experience, a good night out. And I didn't get to see, I saw a bit of Blurred. Didn't get to see any of Oasis because I was driving, and without wanting to cause offence to anyone, Western Supermare on a Saturday night when you're not drinking is not really somewhere you want to be. So plus of living the rock and roll lifestyle, I've got to be up early to do boring Sunday things. Oh, one other thing I did forget. Tim mentioned that, as we think we know, Liam's doing a film to kind of a celebration, as you were. And as a testament to see how much he hasn't actually changed. Apparently Liam is refusing to do the actual interview for the film. He's refused to do it 4 times because he believes it's all getting too popular and getting too mainstream. So yeah, he'll never change, and may he never. So yeah, cheers to that, JC. Thanks for all the good work on the podcast, and as you were.
Nice one. Thank you, Richard, and thank you also to Amy. And yeah, definitely want to get hold of Tim Abbott. We need to get him on. Sounds like an interesting chap. And yeah, maybe we can give away some supersonic gin at some point. That would be good. Let's jump over now to my discussion with Ryan Harvey. Ryan is on the internet at The Harvey Boys and his YouTube channel, Raven798. So make sure you follow him and check him out over there. And after this brief musical interlude, it will be me and Ryan. Welcome to the Oasis podcast, one of our great collaborators, but we haven't actually spoken before, which is Ryan Harvey. How you doing, man?
Hi, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Yeah, yeah. It's good to meet you finally, and just for meet you in an audio way. Yeah. And and thank you very much for all the great stuff you've done for the podcast over the last year or so. You've given us a couple of gig reviews, you've given us a few song breakdowns on the A to Z. It's been fantastic, so thank you very much.
No problem. I guess it's one thing I can kind of geek out on is Oasis, probably. So I think when the podcast came along, it was kind of gave me a new lease of life on doing it this level of detail. Finally, have other people to talk to in that kind of way of who are equally obsessed with it. Maybe not everybody to much as extent as I am, but it's well, good to have other like-minded people. I'm a little bit alone in my sort of family-wise on that. Everyone just groans at my obsession with listening to this stuff far too often. But.
Well, it is. It's that point of like, you know, and people have sent me, you know, there's that Wonderwall breakdown that an American radio station did.
Yeah.
And people have sent that to me. I get sent that quite a lot by people, you know, which is very nice of them. It's very kind that people see that and think of me. But it annoyed me because I'm like, no, it's not good enough. You know, if you're going to do a proper breakdown of Wonderwall, number one, learn the names of the band members and the instruments they play, you know, because I think they said Bonehead was the bass player or something. And you're like, come on, like, you know, simple things. Yeah. And it just made me cross. So anytime that there's any sort of breakdown on you know, on individual songs and things, I think, no, it's not good enough. You've got to get it to the, you know, and let's dig into it and let's do it in a proper way. So, you know, let's talk about the chord sequence and why the chord sequence works and the way it does and all that stuff. So, yeah, I love it. I do love digging into it.
Especially when they seem to be privileged to get hold of that stuff. Like, oh, I don't know if they've ripped it off Rock Band or something like that, how they've actually got hold of those separate mixes. Because when you do just listen to the... It's not a cello or whatever. You're just like, oh, right, yeah. I've never really noticed it that much without just listening to it in isolation. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
I think it is just Rock Band. I mean, so you know, it is the fact that, and it's ridiculous. And we've talked about this with the Beatles. And I actually emailed Marcus Russell about this because, you know, it's, you know, at the moment, the only way of hearing isolated tracks is unless you're a super genius
with an equalizer, a graphic equalizer, and you can dig into it and physically isolate things through, you know, being very clever with audio stuff. Like there's a guy called Anthony Robustelli that does that with the Beatles especially, and with other things. And I think the best way is if you can get a DVD with like 5.1 surround. I think there's then, you know, if you're very clever, you can manipulate it. But other than that, it is just that going back to the masters, and the only tracks that I think have been done on Rock Band are Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger, Live Forever, and Champagne Supernova.
So
there is out there on YouTube, like Live Forever isolated drums, Live Forever isolated vocals.
Yes, I found those, and
I think it is just for those four tracks, though. I haven't seen it for anything else. Although I think there was, Dig Out Your Soul, there is, for something was released that therefore you have got isolated instrumental mixes for everything. I'm not sure what that related to.
They got nothing for me anymore. I got nothing for you. I don't care what they say anymore. All I want is the truth. Out on bail to unveil. Here's the sound. Sing aloud. Watch my style. Pick a pace. Wipe the smile from your face. Out on bail to unveil. Here's the sound. Sing aloud. Watch my style. Pick a pace. Wipe the smile from your face.
It's available for them as well. But, you know, and so my email to Marcus was, look, you know, we're doing these analyses. It would be great if we could somehow get the, you know, get the ability to break into it and not just send it to me personally, but, well, make it available to buy, you know, like the Beach Boys did. You know, the Beach Boys did like a, you know, 73 disc Pet Sounds set, you know, that broke down each individual track. And that's great. Okay. You know, there is a market for that. People would buy
definitely,
it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, so anyway, but for the meantime, though, we have just got what we've got, which is great, and it's really nice to hear that broken down. But I'd love to hear, you know, because you know in various Oasis songs there's bits of chat in the background, or there's like, you know, 27 guitar tracks, and it'd be really great to hear those isolated, but there we go.
And it's good for my, because my sons play, well, they both play drums at the moment, and to just have that Live Forever track so that they can just listen to what's going on the drum and reproduce it is just great kind of thing. And if that was available for more stuff to buy, as you say, there'd be a huge market for, you know, obviously not just Oasis, but any sort of hugely popular band. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of those around as far as I've gathered, because I'm always interested in getting that kind of stuff.
There's enough people that are, you know, even if they said, right, you can buy these individual tracks, Nigel, you could buy the, you know, just the, I was going to say bass line, but you wouldn't be that interested in buying the bass line, I suppose. No. Just the Acquiesce bass line, 79p. No, you're okay. Individual guitar tracks. Sell them, isolated vocal. You know, like the, do you know what I mean, isolated vocal that's out there. It's amazing to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I would have paid for that, but I can't, you know, I can't. It's not available, so I rip it off YouTube. What else are you going to do? So.
Yeah.
So I think you're a couple of years older than me, aren't you, Ryan? You're what, born 78?
Yeah.
So when was your, what was your first, what was your Oasis superhero origin story?
So I mainly picked up on music through the bedroom wall of my sister. So she's a couple of years older than me. So she was heavily into, you know, what became Britpop, and but also local bands or school bands that she was with. So I'd hear a lot of the Levellers and all this kind of stuff she was into coming through the bedroom wall. I was just stuck with the, you know, recording the top 40 off Radio 1 sort of thing. So I was just stuck with things like Two Unlimited and things like that at the time. but I'd hear stuff, and then I'd occasionally start to steal her CDs and thing, because we didn't, you know, we didn't have the greatest relationship. So I'd kind of sneakily steal her CDs and stuff. But so she was, Blur and Nirvana heavily as well. Obviously a year or so before. But it wasn't until I basically recorded Nebworth off the radio, because I'd heard all the hype and I thought, oh, what's this band, you know? And it was on Radio 1, so I stuck in the tape, you know, turned it over at the right time after 45 minutes and all that stuff you used to have to do. Mm-hmm. And then listened to that in the car on the way to university. So I went to university in Sheffield and we just stuck it on in the car. And that was the day I went to uni, and I was just listening to that going, oh, this is amazing. And heard the Master Plan. I even remember that first listening of that from the Nebworth gig on the radio. I was kind of immediately fell in love there and then just endlessly listened to that tape. While I was at uni, basically.
I'm just proud of God, all these good boys. I like to stay on stage, but he always throw me off. Go, piss off. Thank you very much. Respect. This is called the Master Plan. So you can dance if you want to dance.
Obviously, that timing-wise, that was then Be Here Now, sort of followed that the following year.
Sure.
And I discovered all the B-sides and things in the meantime and tapes. And there's actually, that was the year I was 18, basically, so I went, started university, and at the same time started listening to that Nebworth tape was my origin, really. Mm. I just loved it from that point on.
No, quality. And what about learning the guitar?
Yeah, so after listening to that for a year, my dad had always had a guitar. So he plays the Shadows basically endlessly from when he was young, just playing along to all their tunes. So he has a similar obsession with Hank Marvin and the Shadows. So he would just sit and play over and over again the same songs when I was little. But he never, for whatever reason, he never thought to maybe teach me guitar when I was younger. So I just thought, oh, there's that old guitar. I guess it's similar to an old story. There was an old guitar from Dad lying around. So I got him to bring that to uni for my second year, and then basically bought the chord book. So yeah, it was good timing, because you had this the chord books where it basically shows you where to put your fingers for the C chord, the G chord. And obviously with Noel's songs, it was a lot of them were quite easy. So some like Don't Look Back in Anger had like 7 or 8 chords, so that was a bit challenging at the time. But yeah, just had a very old guitar that was very hard to play as well, which didn't help. So then just sat whiling away the hours trying to play along to the songs. Not so great when they're not in the same key, you know, the recordings of is slightly sped up or whatever, so the pitch is slightly higher, so that's really annoying on those first two. The Be Here Now was in the right pitch or whatever, so yeah, very annoying to try and play along to Don't Look Back in Anger and it doesn't sound right. You're out of tune and all that.
It's slightly sped up, isn't it? Yeah.
But then I bought a cheap electric, which immediately then I was like, oh, this is far easier to just get a Squire Strat thing. And then it was just endlessly playing along and buying the whatever the latest chord book was that came out. And then I've just carried on doing that really throughout the albums and everything, and then started learning all other stuff that people, you know, it's just nice to play along to all Beatles stuff and
and
all the popular songs.
Well, the Beatles annoys me because, you know, I'm a very, very, I wouldn't even say I'm a guitar player. I can literally knock out open chords and I struggle with anything else, really.
Yeah.
And it would annoy me so much because, you know, I'd sort of read the Beatles chord books and be like, okay, yeah, I can play that. I can, what the bloody hell is that? You know, you always have these like bizarre chords in there and you just think, nope, or I'll just skip that one out, or I'll just play D instead. That'll do, you know, and
yeah.
But what would annoy me with them is that, you where it was a, like a song like I'm the Walrus has got like 13 chords or whatever, and it's just, you know, okay, fine, look, that's beyond me, I could not have written I'm the Walrus, fine.
Yeah.
But then the frustrating thing when you've got a simple song with like four chords, it's like, why couldn't I write that? You know, why wasn't I able to write? That's not fair. At least that's in the realm of possibility of me being able to write that. And I didn't. And that's not... You know, it's just frustrating, isn't it? That it's so in reach, especially the simplicity of Oasis songs. Yet, you know, there's something that he can do, Noel, that you know, that the rest of us can't, which is just a pain.
Yeah, and I'd say I do have the complete Beatles chord book and all that, but there is only sort of five or six songs that I always gravitate to just playing, like I Want to Hold Your Hand and things that I sort of really liked. But like you say, as soon as I was flicking through the book and then saw all these weird and wonderful things and songs that largely I didn't know and I didn't own at the time, so I just kind of never really got into playing them as much. I probably could now, but don't have enough time now.
Well, while we're on that topic then, so let's have a chat about the current Oasis A to Z that we're on. So so we've got up to Angel Child or Angel Child demo, and the funny thing is with this, because there were so many bracket songs and because there's been so many A songs, you know, I almost feel embarrassed when I say to people like, oh, I've been doing this A to Z and we're up to Angel Child. It's like, oh, they assume, oh, you just started. No, we've been doing this like the 15th song or something. It's just there's been so many brackets before it. But it's strange.
Did you ever work out how long it's going to take you to get to the end I know you asked the other day about whether you should do it more often. I probably think yes.
Yeah, well basically a chap got in touch who's been a good sort of feedback person actually, and I've always said to people, please give us feedback, you know, even if it's negative, I'd much rather get feedback, because often I'll get, you know, love the podcast, mate. You know, Oasis, one of my favourite bands. It's great to hear them discussed, which is fantastic, and I love getting that feedback. But it doesn't really help me to sort of develop the show and what we should do differently and things like that. So I'm always like, yeah, great. Can you be a bit more specific? You know, what didn't you like about whether it's the editing or whatever it is? And this chap on Twitter has just been a lot more honest. And he actually started off, he said something like... I listened to your show at first, but I found it really boring, so I didn't bother. I didn't bother listening to it. And then I've started again like a few months ago, and it's actually not too bad, but you know, like, well, that's quite rude, but actually, thank you for that. And it was him, he said on a message, you know, you should do the Oasis A to Z every show, because, you know, if I don't recognise the name of the person you're talking to, I won't listen.
Yeah, okay.
And I get that. And I just released the last episode with Ken Napzok, who, you know, to me is someone I was like really keen to speak to, because I know he's got a really big following in America particularly. But, you know, I know for a large majority of people, especially in the UK, who's he? Why am I interested in what he's got to say about Oasis? No. So if you had an A to Z every week, it's just a bit of a slog to do one every week.
Yeah, I had no idea who that guy was, but I'm more inclined to listen, and he was great, so
yeah, well,
I guess some people need to listen anyway, so.
Exactly, that's the thing. I mean, but then I do the same thing with like Adam Buxton and the people like that, whereas if I don't recognize, and actually some of my favorite episodes have been with people that I didn't know who they were, just because it's interesting to hear people's stories of how they, you know, how they came to Oasis or how they came to where they are. But anyway, there we go. So the message is, listen to every episode. If you listen to this, you've missed out, so go back and listen to the other ones.
Yeah.
But so Angel Child then. So what was your do you remember first hearing Angel Child? Would it have been buying the Do You Know What I Mean single, or what do you think?
It will have been, because I certainly did buy all the singles at that time, because it was Be Here Now era, that was my era, so I probably would have bought it first day. But this one, it's another one I haven't listened to it a lot, I don't think, and I think it's because my obsession was more with the live versions of everything. So any live version, I love the NTV Unplugged thing, I just have that on loop. So I think the B-sides were more, obviously the Master Plan ones are more kind of have had more repeated listenings of those for obvious reasons, the Master Plan album B-sides. Some of these, I think as well with, was it Alive as well? I really hadn't listened to that a lot. But yeah, so I don't really remember when I would have heard this one, and I'd certainly one I'd long forgotten, I think, until it sort of came back to life in 2012.
Sure, okay. But
not one I used to play along with the guitar, okay. But even though it is kind of one of those where you can do a sort of an acoustic.
Yeah, it feels to me like a relatively simple one that you could play along to.
It sounds like more like Talk Tonight era, you know, the way it's recorded.
Yeah.
Sound wise, and maybe that's the way it demoed.
Yeah.
But it sounds more like that than the Be Here Now era, I think.
Yeah.
Which it normally is electric stuff.
Okay. Okie dokie.
Well, there wasn't any. There wasn't any acoustic-y Be Here Now B-sides other than this, was there? I think there was.
Yeah,
Going
so,
Nowhere.
Yeah.
You'd maybe. It's not acoustic-y. It's sort of. But that's such a big production with all
but
the.
It's properly
and
produced.
Everything.
Yeah.
But this is. I suppose that's why they called it demo. Yeah, but if you're calling this demo, you could probably call half the first album stuff that, you know, the Take Me Aways and Talk Tonights and.
Yeah.
Do You Want to Be a Spaceman? They were pretty much similar level. I don't really get why this is called demo. Maybe just at the time that, you know, that they were planning on doing a bit more to it. And just thought, well, at least if we call it demo, then it gets a bit more leeway, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I saw a note somewhere, someone saying that Noel had said that he never finished it sort of thing. So maybe it was just to give that caveat of
this is
a demo.
And just to sort of say, you've got an interesting, for someone that's not that big on the song, you've actually got an interesting history with it, because it's only been played live on a couple of occasions, and you were there for one of them.
Yeah, so it was Shepherd's Bush Empire in 2012. So it was the farewell gig for that first album. So I think they just tacked on a small gig at the end so that they could go out and have a party basically in London after and then go home, I think, at the early hours. So they'd done the year or so of touring or whatever, and then they added this gig on. So I managed to get a ticket, and it was the gig where I got a ticket and thought, right, I'm finally going to go and get to the front on I'd never done that with Oasis, right? I'd always been with people and no one could be bothered to, you know, queue up early and go to the front.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew how it was done. I'd kind of done it for Travis before. It was a lot easier to get to the front for Travis.
Sure.
But you basically have to go a lot earlier. So I kind of arrived about midday and there was already about 20 people in front of me. You know, the obsessives. Or even more obsessive. Then you just kind of have to wait until they open the doors and then run to the front to actually get, I mean, it's much more comfortable to just get on the barrier rather than being on the second row and having to stand for probably 4 hours then if you're waiting for the whole gig. I managed to get the last spot on the barrier even though I'd gone so early.
Oh, wow.
It right at the right hand side as well, so I wasn't even, you know, kind of central. But yeah, I achieved what I set out to do anyway. And then so it was basically the set list of the usual of that first High Flying Birds tour, and then with a few things thrown in. So Angel Child was one, and I think he'd only, was that the first time he'd maybe done it in the actual tours?
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah, he's done it. He's done it, like you said, in a couple of radio things, which is funny.
Yeah.
When you look on, like, what I always tend to use for these, now it's never 100% accurate, but it's the best we can get, is setlist.fm.
Yeah.
And, it's noted that there's a couple of Oasis playing it, but it was never played at a concert. It was played at, like, a couple of radio things, like you
and
said,
it's...
so...
Yeah, I found this morning it was played on this XFM War Child Legends.
Sure.
He played it in August then, so I think that was the first time he played it, and that's actually on video on YouTube of someone in the audience. So it was another one of these special gigs for 100 people or whatever. And Russ is playing all the little acoustic sort of picking bits.
Cool.
On an acoustic and micro with, you know, ever there micro with the piano by his side as usual. So that was August, and then perhaps he then just decided to throw it into this kind of last special gig on the tour. Won't you make me see what's wrong and right? Would there be no eyes? No eyes that see such beauty could lose their sight, and there'll be no lies. No lies that you would tell me to make things right, 'cause I gave all my money to people and things, and the price I'm still paying, and the shit that it brings doesn't fill me with hope for the songs that you sing tonight. This is your life, angel child. As well. So, I think... Again, I've got it recorded on YouTube, but for whatever reason, I don't think it's as popular as... Because at the time, it was overshadowed by Idler's Dream.
Right.
Which everyone wanted him to play live at that at some point, and it had been mentioned, and then he eventually did it. And I think he did it a handful of times. So everyone wanted that, and he did play that at that gig as well. So that was far more... Because Idler's Dream, I just love it. And he's just... It's one of the few times where he's just playing... like notes on a guitar. It's just him singing and just playing arpeggios, you'd call it, just picking the okay. individual notes of the chords rather than just strumming along, which is normally what Noel would do in a, especially in a solo song. And it's just so cool, haunting, mesmerizing, and that. So I think that song actually overshadowed. And if you look at my YouTube hits and everyone else, I think Idler's Dream just has far more. It's on mine, it's about 100 times more views on Idler's Dream live than Angel Child, which again is equivalent kind of rare demo, rare B-side sort of thing. So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, he did both on that gig, so I guess one kind of overshadowed the other.
Which is interesting, because you'd think that, do you know what I mean? Was a million selling single, and it was the you know, the Back From Be Here Now single, and it's got, it's such an incredible, it's an incredible four tracks. I'm not a huge fan of. It's Heroes, the fourth track on that, isn't it? It's Stay Young.
Yeah.
It's Stay Young and Heroes, and do you know what I mean? And I remember everyone was so excited about this coming back. So I think it's probably got a lot more public consciousness than Idler's Dream, which was much later, but most people had dropped off. But it's interesting. I think in the fan community, there's definitely always been that love for Idler's Dream and You've Got the Heart of a Star. I always lump those two in together, I think, in that.
Yeah.
And that sort of later, but we're back into Noel acoustic-y. There wasn't that many Noel acoustic-y around that time, was there? It's really just those two, I think, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, and what about the actual song itself? And so you just say, Ryan, you mentioned there about your, on your YouTube channel. So you do various bits, but one of the things you do is guitar tutorials, right?
Yeah, just... the main one I did was Champagne, when he started doing the new Champagne Supernova in the Chasing Yesterday's tour, so the acoustic Champagne Supernova with the High Flying Birds, that I kind of put that on because I immediately wanted to figure that out, you could figure it out from the YouTube videos of the performance. So I quickly threw that together and put that up, and I think it's one of the only, I think there's basically two lessons on that on YouTube. So I've got a good 40,000 hits nearly on that. It's certainly died down, but in the first year that was obviously everyone was searching for that, I guess, every Noel guitar playing fan, I suppose.
Well, there you go. Well, that's pretty
and
good.
I did three lines for the World Cup the other week. I would do more of them, but it's so flooded, that kind of YouTube. I think maybe if someone did a dedicated Oasis one, you'd probably get good traction. And if I could get time, I would maybe do it. I guess Georgia Rose is probably the main one that gets all the hits.
That's Aussie guy, isn't it? Georgia Rose, yeah.
I don't think you're going to surpass his, because he's like 10 years or at least. You're going to be hard to usurp him, I think.
Yeah, oh well. There we go. But no, that's brilliant. So, and where can people find that? Is Raven 798, is it?
It's Raven 798, yeah. I tried to rename it to the Harvey Boys, it's kind of your Google ID, so I guess. But yeah, Raven 798 should come up. But yeah, the other stuff, I basically post my, if I do record stuff at the gig, so I tend to get a good recording and I post them up, so as I did with the Ritz the other week.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great. And so what else about Angel Child then? So in terms of the chord sequence, what's going on in the chords here?
So I guess it seems to be in sort of A minor. It's a very kind of minor song, obviously. So it's I've got the guitar here. I don't know if you can hear
it. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know this one a lot, but I do like it's similar to Talk Tonight, where he seems to have done a second track of just sort of sliding guitar riffs, I guess. On at least on the demo versions, so that's quite good. But yeah, otherwise we're sort of A minor, E minor. There's a so that's basically the gist of it all, isn't it? And I think I do want to basically that bit in the chorus where it's tonight this is your angel child. So whether he sort of discovered that it's like a D diminished chord. So it, Noel doesn't do a lot of those. It's normally straightforward major or minor chords in a lot. So it's one of the rare times where he'd sort of done a. As just sort of changing one of them, flattening one of the fifth or something like that. But yeah diminished chord. So whether he sort of found that and then built a song around it, maybe, or had done the song and then thought it needed a little bit of a hook adding. But that's the only kind of significant bit in the song that is a little bit different for Noel. But otherwise, it's just a straightforward usual Noel kind of Talk Tonight or something like that. I think.
I really like that. That's so lovely. It's shimmering, I'd say that bit is. It's sort of got that it's got that descending, and the fact that he's keeping the melody the same over the top, I think it works really nicely. And then the strum back on the angel child. It's a real nice, it's quite dynamic in that way, do you know what I mean? So
it's back really into like the major that. Kind of thing.
No, it's good. And as you say, that sliding around on top of it. And the there's a solo as well, isn't there? Like that. So, it's not particularly like an extravagant solo, but it's more just, picking out chords and notes. And, it's sort of when I, that interview that Richard Buskin did with Owen Morris, and he was talking about, Noel's method, and that he would just, relay over and over and over again, just like fiddling around on the different chords, and that just feels like what he's done there, and he's just picked out a couple of really nice little sounding, just playing the notes in the chords, isn't it, really? It's just picking out individual ones, yeah. About lyrically, so what have we got? We've got won't you take me to the edge of night and make me walk into the light, and there'll be no eyes that see such beauty would lose their sight, which I think that's a lovely line. I think no eyes that see such beauty would lose their sight. That sounds like he's probably nicked it from a poem. Because I do really like that. No eyes that see such beauty would lose their sight. And then we've got, and there'll be no lies that you could tell me to make things right. because I gave all my money to... Then we're back into Noel's obsession with money, which often comes up. Because I gave all my money to people and things, and the price I'm still paying for the shit that it brings doesn't fill me with hope for the songs that you sing tonight. This is your life, Angel Child.
Yeah, do we know anything about who it's about or anything? I don't know.
And then the verse two, when you find out who you are, you know you'll be free to see your own ability, but there'll be no eyes. And then it just repeats the same thing again, basically. And then it just repeats tonight, this is your life, Angel Child, all at the end. So I don't think, I've never seen a breakdown of it that anyone's spoken about it, that Noel's ever said what it's actually about. It's one of those frustrating ones. You think, you know, I just wish someone would go in track by track and just say, what did this mean? You know, but...
I guess someone needs to get time from Noel to do that, don't they?
To actually just go song by song, like Lennon did it. I think Rolling Stone interview with Jan Wenner, he just went through and did, you know, just did a few sentences about every song. That's what we need, really. I think Won't You Take Me to the Edge of Night and Walk into the Light, I mean, that's just, yeah, whatever. That's just rhyming words. I don't think that means anything. I don't think no eyes that see just beauty and no lies would tell me to make things right. I don't think that really means anything either. I just think it's a nice image.
It fits.
And it fits beautifully to the melody.
Yeah.
This is your life, Angel Child. I mean, maybe it could be a song to one of his, I suppose, how old's Anaïs? 18? Would she have been born then? No, I don't think so.
No.
She would have been born too. So I don't think he's got any children at this point. So it's not like he's singing to his child. It could be a baby, you know, singing to his baby, this is your life, Angel Child. But
yeah.
But no, I think this is pre-babies. So I haven't got a clue. This is where we need Katie Georgiou to step in again, because she actually understands this stuff. But yeah, I don't think there's much to it. I think that it's a nice words that rhyme. A couple of them are very nice and poetic. And then that line about, you know, gave all my money to people and things, and the price I'm still paying for the shit that it breaks. Yeah. He's just moaning about money, as he often does. So, which then doesn't fit with the rest of the song at all. But, you know, there you go. I think that's...
Yeah.
I think that's about all the lyrical analysis I can give on that one. You got anything else, Ryan?
No, and yes, probably because I'm not a big lyrics guy. So
you're not a big lyrics guy, no?
No, it's melody, and I suppose I'm more obsessed with the guitar side of the things than the lyrics. So,
sure.
Just one thing I'd noticed was someone posted, there was a video in at the end of 2011 where, because people always in the crowds, when you can hear the crowd, they're shouting like Angel's Child is quite a common thing that used to get shouted at him. And he doesn't remember it. Apparently after he then played Talk Tonight, apparently after that he said to the crowd, oh, I know what you mean now, there's a song, wasn't there, that kind of thing. So that may or may not have been the genesis of even them playing it the year after.
Sorry? Angel, what does that mean? Does that mean? Is that a compliment? Thank you very much.
The guy on YouTube certainly he didn't actually record the end of the bit where he said he remembered the song, but it may well have been that he got reminded of it, because I suppose this was recorded in a very crazy time, right? So he may well have completely forgotten
about the song. Yeah, no, definitely. And I haven't got to hand, actually, so I'll drop this in afterwards, but the Oasis Recording Info website normally has a breakdown of when these things were recorded. So it will have been, it will have been, I imagine, well, we know it was demoed in Mustique, so there will have been then the first sessions back for Be Here Now, I imagine, would have been recorded around then. But I'll dig that out and drop that in. But... happy with it being a B-side? Do you think it could have been a single or an album track? Or do you think a B-side's about right?
Yeah, cause I don't think it's as good as things like Talk Tonight, because we always talk about those. Those could have been, you know, non-B-sides, I guess, A-sides. But for me, it's not as good as those, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not as memorable.
Mm. And I don't think, as you said, I don't think it would have fitted on Be Here Now. just because Be Here Now has such a specific sound. You know, even the ballads like Stand By Me and Don't Go Away, they are so loud. And I think to have put that sound on this song, it wouldn't have worked. I think this needs to sit in this sort of B-side world for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play. Good. All right. Well, obviously, anyone that has got any other thoughts on Angel Child, do feel free to fire it over. And yeah, so that's fine. So I was just going to then touch upon as well, because I know you're a serial gig goer as well, and you've always been kind enough to drop over the reviews. But the one recent one that we haven't heard from you from yet, because we knew you were coming on, was the Knowles show at the Ritz. So how was that?
Yeah, good. So it kind of came up. Well, brilliant, actually. It came up. I guess it was only planned a few weeks before. So again, I kind of jumped on and got a ticket. Which was a case of if you manage to get a ticket in the first 10 seconds, then you're okay. Otherwise, you no luck. It was only, I guess, about 1,000 or so in the gig. So it was for Absolute Radio, as we know. So they were filming and putting it out as audio. So I think they'd done that before on the last tour, hadn't they? Absolute Radio, the Chasing Yesterday tour. I think there was an Absolute Radio gig of that as well. And yeah, it was brilliant. So I stood up. The Ritz is like an old nightclub, I think, with just basically a huge dance floor and then a balcony around the top. It was like being in a university club again or something. But yeah, I stood on the balcony at the side, because I didn't go early this time because I was working. So I got a good spot on the balcony at the side, which, as you know, I was posting videos, which I couldn't resist. I was one of those annoying people with the phones at the gig. But yeah, it was so much better than the arena gigs. And if I knew about these gigs, I would maybe not bother with the arena gigs. But these small gigs are never really planned. So that one in we were talking about in Shepherd's Bush in the first tour, that was just tacked on the end, and I went, and once you go into a small gig where you're in the same room and you can literally, you know, within reaching distance, or you know, at least you can see them and you can hear them, feel them kind of up close, it's such a better gig. And so I certainly enjoyed it a lot more than Wembley, but my seat at Wembley was so bad. It was at the back of the floor.
Yeah,
can't see them. You know, looking at the big screen for you to actually see them. So yeah, obviously it was much better than that from an experience point of view. And obviously I've got used to the album, so we've I guess maybe moved on from that initial. I even enjoyed Be Careful What You Wish For. I wouldn't say it's amazing, really? But but I was yeah, maybe I'm used to it now. It's, again, everything takes many listens, I suppose, and you get used to it. But so yeah, the guy, I can't remember his name, but the guy who did the interview, the Absolute Radio guy, sort of strange guy, came on at the beginning and just introduced him. But they came straight on. He didn't even introduce the band or anything as they normally do during the gig. But I guess everyone knew why they were there. So yeah, they just came straight on, straight into the usual set list, and then they basically put in Who Built the Moon, as you know, which I shared the video. And then he says at the end, which I didn't clock while I was there, and you couldn't really hear the audio of what he was saying in the actual venue, but he'd said they'd played the album, basically, which I hadn't realized as when they did it. So normally they did pretty much play the album except for Who Built the Moon, I suppose. I think they pretty much played them all.
Yeah, but it wasn't in a row, and they didn't play the interludes, did they? So, no. So it wasn't like, you know, this is the whole album, you know, start to finish, like some bands have done with other albums, but because they missed the interludes. But effectively, the whatever it is, 7-8 songs that make up the album, they played in whole.
Yeah. So highlight for me is Normal's Little by Little, just again in that small room. And I just love, I always love the Finsbury Park video of that with, and just Gem's bits on that. Yeah. I just love that song, playing along to it myself. So that's always the highlight for me, even more so in a small room like that with Gem there as well. Because obviously we had Tim Smith in the previous tours and he changed the solo, which for me was sacrilege.
Right. Okay.
you have to play the Gem solos. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I know he's a friend of the show, but I think he was given more kind of do what you want, feel like, by Noel. Whereas Gem will play the 2000 versions of those kind of songs, won't he? So that, and of course Dead in the Water, still you can't really beat that in there, especially in a small room as well. Mm. And then we got, was it Alone on the Rope, which again, a similar kind of Angel Child, kind of more recent B-side thing, which I'm still getting used to.
Yeah, what was the response to Alone on the Rope? Because, you know, if you're an Oasis fan, you know it. Well, if you're a ridiculous fan that listens to bootlegs and things like we are, then you know it. But, you know, your average album buyer wouldn't have known it. So did it get
zero response, I think. Just those guys on the front row and in the middle, I'm sure were going crazy. But otherwise, I don't think anyone really knew that one. Mm-hmm. And it's very slow as well and plodding. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I suppose
not first time listening, you're not going to love it.
It's not like you're playing a rare track that's like a real bouncy, aggressive one. And so even if you don't know it, then you still get into it. It's a plaintive ballad. And if you don't know it to have a sing-along anthem sort of thing for it, then, you just nod quietly and listen, isn't it? That's about it. Yeah. And Whatever came back as well, didn't he? He dropped back in Whatever. I don't think I mentioned that on the episode, but which was cool.
Yeah, I think I'd seen a video on YouTube of that like maybe the week or so before. So I think he played it a couple of times in the weeks prior. And Liam also introduced it, didn't he, in the last couple of months, so it's a bit weird. doing Whatever and both doing Wonderwall.
I did wonder whether Liam bringing that back was whether Noel bringing that back was a direct response to Liam having brought it back. I don't know whether or not he's that aware of what Liam's playing. I don't know.
It just strikes me that I wouldn't imagine it being one of Noel's favourites, but I don't know why. I don't know why, really. But and to bring it, I guess, back for a small gig, I suppose it's obviously sing-along wise in Manchester. Maybe that was a motivation behind it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Good. And so how does that then compare? Because I think of the you having seen Liam. Where did you see Liam again? Sorry, Ryan.
In Nottingham Arena in last December.
Yeah, so you saw Liam in Nottingham and then you saw Noel at Wembley, and you sort of said of the two that Liam's gig you preferred, but, probably primarily just because of where you were sat, maybe. But then how does Noel's gig then compare the Manchester Ritz one to there's no, it's stupid doing head-to-head, isn't it? But sorry, let's do it. So how does it compare?
I would equal for me. So I think I need to see Noel in a small venue like that. It's not a very privilege that you often get, but that equal to me of seeing Liam can do. I think Liam can do the big arena gigs, and the crowd are maybe playing 50% of the part as well, I suppose, because he needs a bit of help, really, doesn't he? So I think the songs and the crowd kind of help Liam. So equally brilliant those two gigs. Noel in the big arena, I'm not digging anymore at the moment.
Yeah.
So and it's because he can't do those his anthems. I think Little by Little is a very unique song, maybe, to me. I don't know. But the crowds go nuts for that as well. But there isn't many of those Noel sort of anthems like that. Because he now does the slow Don't Look Back in Anger. So it's not really a...
Exactly. So he does a slow Don't Look Back in Anger. He does a slow... Well, when he does Champagne Supernova, it's like a slow acoustic Champagne Supernova. The Ryan Adams... The Wonderwall is sort of a hybrid now, isn't it, of the Ryan Adams and Oasis. So it's not... It's not. It's just he's... It's like he's deliberately not wanting to be, you know, it's a sing-along kind of, you know, copy the record sort of show, which I respect that. Like we've said when I reviewed it previously, you know, I respect it. He wants to do it in his own way, which is fine. Yeah. You know, but yeah, just
I think his gigs now though as well. I think things like If I Had a Gun and Heat at the Moment, the crowds go crazy for those, and that. So that's good that he's managed to get those kind of solo ones that he keeps bringing back. I think he's played those all three tours really, and obviously If I Had a Gun, it probably gets more of a reaction now than Wonderwall kind of thing, certainly from the Noel fans, I guess.
Did anyone used to come here on a Tuesday? Was it a Tuesday? They used to, in for a penny, in for a pound. You're too fucking young, what are you clapping at? There used to be a thing called in for, you got in for a penny and you got a pound to spend at the bar. That's how shit it was. And it was called, we used to call it the Grab a Granny Night. Have you never heard of this? Well, that was in this fucking club. Many an ex-girlfriend has fell by the fucking wayside in this club. Only a pound. A great night out.
Is that you done now for this current round of gigs? Have you got anything else booked?
Well, it's just festivals now, isn't it? Which I've never really done festivals, and considering I like small gigs, it's probably not really my thing.
I'd imagine.
It'd be nice if I could get on, because I think there was a kind of end of tour secret one in the last tour as well. It was at Brixton in 2015, but I think I was working or away then, so I didn't manage to go to that one. But if there was always this kind of little gig, I'd probably try and certainly get to that one.
No, fair play.
I'd recommend anyone else to as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, by the sounds of it, yeah, that is definitely the better way to see him. Good. And the only other thing I was going to mention, because I haven't talked about it on here, because I haven't actually watched it yet, but there's the new Netflix Noel documentary that's just been released, hasn't there? So, yeah. And you've checked that out. What did you think?
Yeah, I managed to get it while it was still on YouTube. But yeah, it's a bit dated because it's from, was it May 2017 or something? So I was expecting to hear, I didn't know that, so I was expecting to maybe hear a couple of the new songs in the set, because I thought it was to go along with this tour, or that was the assumption I made. But it seems like they've been sat on it for a year and a half, and just released it, I guess. It was good to see a different production. It's almost like a little mini documentary. So there's a lot of kind of in the studio talking to the studio guys who did it all. So it's half of it is a gig in front of a small audience, which was in London somewhere, I think, last that time. But he's doing the usual kind of, I don't know what, talk tonight and the kind of solo, the ones that he's got quite repetitive now, I think. So there was nothing really new in there. But then he does four in a studio, kind of acoustic, with just Mike Rowe on the piano.
Okay.
So you'd expect some great ones from there. But and he does play Dead in the Water on it. I think he's just strumming the chords, because obviously Dead in the Water's from 2015 originally, I think. That radio, predates that radio thing in Ireland. So I guess he was strumming around with that at the time, and maybe even recorded, but that's not on there, so I was a little bit disappointing. So you get the usual one. I think Wonderwall is the Ryan Adams version there, so I was like, ugh, okay.
I was pretty adverse to playing an acoustic guitar live. I would never do it.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know, because by God, I fucking caned it since. And we would do it electric.
Right.
And of course, it would be really fast. And of course, the melody only works if the song's quite slow, because if you're going, we're gonna, that's quite cool. But if you're going, and it would get fucking quite ridiculous and be like the Buzzcocks or something. And I remember we didn't play it for years afterwards. We used to play it over the PA after the gig had finished.
I don't really like that one. Because I think live now he has started playing the, you know, the Liam melody.
Yeah.
So singing the Liam melody again instead of the Ryan Adams one. So yeah, songs wise it wasn't so great, but it was good to see a different kind of interview set up and seeing a little bit behind the scenes. Certainly, yeah, good for an old fan to watch.
Mm.
Yeah, is it cool. Lauren? Is it Lauren out. Laverne? Is the interviewer? Is it Lauren?
Oh
is
yeah,
name?
Lauren Laverne.
But yeah, I don't know where she's been, but she seems to have been frozen in time. She looks like same as she did 20 years ago.
Exactly.
It's almost like it was an old interview. It's like.
That's interesting. Yeah.
No, but yeah, there's a lot of repetitive answers to the questions, but I guess that's probably doesn't help that it's a year and a half old. So it's all the usual answers that we've heard from him a thousand times about songwriting and various anecdotes. They're all, there's not much new in there, I don't think.
Okay. No, fair enough. Well, yeah, I'll definitely, I do need to get around to checking it out. But as I say, I wasn't, same as you said, I knew that it was shot, you know, a little while ago, so I wasn't too desperate to jump on it because, you know, I knew it was kind of out of date now, but interesting. All right, well, thank you very much. And I think that's about it, isn't there, unless there's anything else we need to talk about.
Any one little thing I don't know if I've never mentioned is, so in that sessions he calls out to the girl in the front row who always follows him around. So I think this is this Talk Tonight 27 person. You know this.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sandra, as she is on Twitter. I just wondered if you'd ever tried to reach out to her for an interview, because she's been following him around for at least a decade. And actually, you see her on. I have no idea what she doesn't post pictures of herself, as far as I can see.
Mm.
Because obviously, always following her videos on YouTube, because she always has front row videos of everything, and I don't think I've ever seen her, but you can actually see her on that set, assuming it is her, because he says she follows me around everywhere. I just thought, if you wondered if you've ever had any contact with her or not.
No, I haven't had any contact with her. I definitely, it's one of those names that's come up a couple of times that would be worth having a chat to, so there you go.
She seems to try and stay anonymous, so she might not be up for an interview, but I don't know.
Same as the brilliant Louise of Stop Crying Your Heart Out. You know, I'd love to get her on, but she just doesn't want to get involved, which is completely understandable, because there are some horrible idiots out there on the internet who, you know, what was it she's saying? That she was getting attacked, really horrible stuff, saying, you know, but she'll get it from some people saying, oh, you've given Noel too much coverage and not enough to Liam. And then she'll get, you know, you've given Liam too much coverage and not enough to Noel. It's like, you idiots. Like, she covers everything. Yeah. You know, and she does such an amazing job. I don't think anyone that I know in any of Oasis fandom or anything works more than her.
Because she's basically posting on this day in history. So, she, you know, that takes work to do that every day.
You know, and she's got probably the best electronic archive of everything. Every interview is scanned. Everything is done. You know, so the work she does. So anyway, Louise, we salute you if you're listening.
Yep.
Good. All right, Brian. Well, thank you so much for your time, mate. It is really good fun. And please, if you're happy to keep doing it, we will happily keep getting your reviews and A to Zs, because we've got some interesting songs coming up as well. So much appreciated.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Good. Right. All right. I'm going to press stop now, so don't say anything interesting.
If I'm writing a song in Oasis and it's about my missus, number one, can't tell Liam it's about your missus, right? Because that ain't going to fucking work. Number two, you're more liable to deliver that song better because you know what it's about. You know the person in the song, and you know what the story is. Should there be a story? And you know what the feeling is. So when I'm singing now, I don't think anyone can sing my songs as good as I can. Not because I'm a better singer than anybody else, because I fucking know what they mean, you know what I mean?
So thank you very much to Ryan. I hope you guys enjoyed that chat. It's good to just geek out about Oasis. And if you wanted to get in touch about any of those topics, either the Noel Netflix Once in a Lifetime or Angel Child or any of the other things we talked about, then do get in touch. And just finishing off on Angel Child, because I didn't have the info handy when I spoke to Ryan, but I did put out on Twitter, we rated it and we asked for your comments. So let's see how that went. So we had 5 out of 5 got 25%, 4 got 32%, 3 got 33%, and 2 out of 5 got 10%, which is quite interesting. So somewhere between 3 and 4% basically is what you guys thought. And let's get some comments. Greedy Soul, who is at Supernova Dragon, said rounded up from 2.5 to 3, but starting to think I should have voted 2. It's obviously only a demo, so you can't mark it down too much. However, I find the lyrics a little lacking, to be honest. Can't get into this song that much, and I feel it needed a full band treatment. As You Were at Lila 95 said, oh no, I went for 4 out of 5. The meaning behind the lyrics is brilliant, and the song is on the same level, if not better, than a lot of songs from the same era. Dan Best at Dan Best 84 says, still love it, 4 out of 5 for me. I remember that acoustic gig in Paris he did with Gem when someone from England kept shouting Angel Child between songs. He kind of snapped. Snow Patrol wished they had a tune like this. That's fair enough. Brits and Pieces, who is at Brits Pieces. Now, this one is not all about the actual song. It's about the timing of release. It's 1997. You've not heard a new Oasis song since 1995, other than the crap bootleg of My Big Mouth and It's Getting Better Man from 96. Then, Do You Know What I Mean is released. You now have 4 new songs and you get your fix. All brilliant. Beautifully put, Brits and Pieces. Brianna Westervelt, who's at BryWest11, says, great tune simply because it's Noel and the guitar. But since it's only a demo, you have to wonder what it would have sounded like had they recorded a legitimate version. My favourite part, though, has to be how easily the song transitioned into Heroes. Yes, and that's something I didn't mention to Ryan, which I wanted to mention. So let's have a bit of the transition into Heroes. Jacopo Lagomarsino, who is Jacopo Lago, I always play this one as soon as I put new strings on my acoustic guitar. The sliding thing on the D sus is much easier on fresh strings. Niall Collins at Collinio, there's a reason it never made it past demo stage, a really ordinary song. Johnny Micklewright, who is at JJ Micklewright, I love the jangly sound to this acoustic song, would have loved to hear it with some drums and bass guitar behind it, as they would perfectly suit. As it is, I could imagine this song serving as a soundtrack to a Cadillac driving through the sunset in the USA or something. Well, it's very poetically put there, Johnny. Michael Hart at What a Mind Blast. Of all the Be Here Now era B-sides not included on the master plan, this one has the biggest case for its inclusion. Maybe a little long. Yeah, fair enough. Good point. Sufjan Irfan at Big Man Like Irfan, underrated song for me. It isn't a belter, but it's a nice, calm acoustic song. Definitely 4 for me. I listen to it quite regularly. Thank you. Michael Kinsella at Mictrick 67, decent enough wee acoustic song. Probably my least favourite on the Do You Know What I Mean single, but not terrible. Well, least favourite on the Do You Know What I Mean single. That's like saying least favourite of 4 things that are all brilliant, isn't it? Sorry, I'm tired. Chop 81, who is at Chop Paul Gray 262. I remember going to HMV to buy the Do You Know What I Mean single and getting home excited as fuck. I was 16 at the time, great track as is Stay Young, but Noel's version of Heroes overshadowed them for me. Thought it was fucking ace at the time and still do, but I think I'm a rare few on that one. Yeah, for me, I think Stay Young, do you know what I mean? Angel Child, then Heroes. I think Heroes is fine, but I don't think it's amazing. I would have preferred to hear Liam sing it. The gentleman at KL calling you. At the time, this was a continuation of the joy we all got listening to Noel doing an acoustic number. The fact it was a demo as well made it even more special, like we were listening to the master creating another hit tune. Lovely. Really well put. Sean Quirk at official_SQ. No eyes that see such beauty would lose their sight is one of my favourite ever Noel lyrics. Also associated with my daughter. Beautiful song, 4 out of 5. Ah, how interesting. You picked out the same line that I did. Chris, a man of great taste. Chris Tompkins at Tomo Hove. Love the off-kilter rhythm of this, and the guitar playing is sublime. Great vocal too. Thank you. Richard Bowes, him again, at rbowes81. A good Noel acoustic B-side. Also the last, as it was a demo, I always wanted to hear the full version. But actually, nice relief from the Be Here Now bluster. Also loved the transition into Heroes. Yep, well put. And Rob H., who is at Rob004, said, the fade and drum intro to Heroes, then does like a clapping emoji. And Jim Regan at JaneBowes72 said, one of my favourites. I remember grabbing one of the last import singles at HMV in the city. Just added to the Be Here Now hype. And Ethan Michael Kramer at EthanMichael31 says, it's a really good demo, should have been developed further. You can also hear the rushing water from the river in the background. Huh, I don't know if I can. I haven't thought of that before. Good shout. Thank you for that, Ethan. So thank you, everyone, for those. Some really good points there. And we had one audio review, and I can't remember who's done it. So over to you, mystery caller.
Hi James, Martin Langhorne here. I'm just giving my feedback on the Angel Child demo. Remember, this was on the first CD single I ever bought. I think it was the Do You Know What I Mean back in '97. Recently was listening to it actually because I've collected all the vinyl singles, which cost me quite a bit. Anyway, pretty much great track. I think I can't imagine it being with the whole band. It's pretty much good as what it is. I think it could have been on Be Here Now, probably instead of Magic Pie, which would definitely be have dropped, but probably not so much as Stay Young. Anyway, keep up the good work, great podcast, and speak soon. Bye.
Martin Langhorne, of course. How could I forget? Thank you very much, Martin. Much appreciated. So that will do it on Angel Child, unless you want to get in touch and let me know, and then we can pick up on it on a future episode. Next up on the Oasis A to Z is, we're finally out of the A's and we're into the B's, and it is Bag It Up from Dig Out Your Soul. So if you've got something to say about Bag It Up, then please get in touch. Everything I believe in is telling me that I want more, more, more. Lay your love on the fire. When you come on in, I got my heebie-jeebies in it in a bag. Tell me what you desire. I will bag it up high. So that will do it for the Oasis podcast for today. Thank you very much for listening, as ever. Please make sure you're following me at Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And you can support the show at patreon.com/oasispod. There's various levels there. Head over there and you can support from $1 per month. You can get merch with the Oasis Podcast logo at TeePublic. Oh, and if you wanted to put out some sort of random Oasis t-shirt design, then feel free to get in touch and tell me about it, and we can put it out through the Oasis Podcast page on there. And I think you only make like $2 per sale or something, but if you particularly fancy doing that, then let me know, and you're welcome to the $2 per sale. Oh, and yeah, please do subscribe and review on iTunes. They come up to 98 reviews on the UK iTunes store. So if you can do a couple of reviews on iTunes, get me over 100, that would be fantastic. Right, that will do it for today. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Turns out it's gonna be the time.